Hey Fresh Capital listeners, in this week's episode, we're looking at one of Southeast Asia's most well-known companies, Grab. Known as the Everyday Everything app, Grab started out as a taxi hailing app and has extended its products to include ride hailing, food, groceries, delivery, and financial services. It's a super app. Grab is one of Albert's favorite companies we've looked at. To find out why, keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn about companies and investing. My name is Dan. Joining me for our 101st episode, Albert, how are you doing?
Dan, I'm going good. Listen to our 100th episode today. And it was pretty good. I'm pretty happy with how that episode went. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I had a lot of fun actually editing that one. I left your swears in and just beeped them out this time as opposed to removing them completely. But it's fun actually to sort of go across 8 different companies, do a bit of a quick fire round. You know, maybe that's something that will break out a bit more frequently. Not every episode, obviously, but it's a fun way to mix things up.
It's funny because I was listening to it, I was reading also someone else's analysis on Adobe Figma, and they're like, oh, it's so bullshit, like Adobe buying this business for $50 billion, it's, you know, priced earning, whatever. Like, you don't even know what Figma is in your analysis. Like, this person had written all this, like, information about Figma and how it was overvalued. But I was like, you don't even know what Figma is as a product, and if you contextualize both things, then you would understand it's a great business. And I was listening to that, our pod and how you were talking about Adobe and Figma. And I was like, we're actually really good at this analysis because we contextualize the business rather than just talking about random ratios that don't make sense without any context.
Well, I mean, that's the reason why we started the pod, Albert, is we're a bit sick and tired of all the numbers just being thrown around and, you know, what seems about very little understanding of the underlying business. And I mean, look, ultimately, one is not better than the other. You probably want to combine both those two, but I think we get there in the end. And I'm much happier understanding a business and what they do than just the numbers behind a business.
For sure. The numbers are meaningless if you don't understand what a business does.
That's a pretty good lead in, Albert, because this week's episode, we're looking at the super app from Singapore, Grab. And it's a really multifaceted business. It's got a lot of stuff going on. You're super bullish. I'm still trying to wrap my head around some of the key parts of their business, and I want to test those ideas with you. So let's start it off, Albert. Do you want to give a quick description of what is Grab and why are you so keen on it?
Yeah, I messaged you right before you started recording saying, like, this is the kind of business I love and this is exactly the business that I'm looking for in my portfolio to kind of pad it out. I don't have a consumer business like this yet, so I think this is a great addition. Grab, they've got this aspiration to become the leading demand aggregation platform in Southeast Asia. It's really like lofty and nebulous. Like, I'll break that down. What Grab is, they're a leading super app, and they play across a bunch of different services like food delivery, mobility, financial services, and enterprise services. And they operate across each of these verticals as a marketplace. So they offer services and connect suppliers of those services to demand, so consumers who use their services. So when you talk about like a demand aggregation platform, it's any marketplace that aggregates people who want a service and people who are providing that service, like Airbnb, because they aggregate demand, you know, people who've got houses and people who want to stay in those houses. Grab is exactly the same, but they play across delivery, mobility, financial services, and enterprise services. So that kind of provide a real high-level overview of what they do.
Yeah, and I think it's a good place to just sort of hold, because later on what we'll get into is one of the potentially other verticals they'll have, which is advertising. And when you're talking about an aggregator marketplace, which aggregates demand, that's got a really neat fit in with obviously advertising. You know, you can think of traditional newspapers that aggregate so many eyeballs to a paper, and then that's where the advertisers would all go and spend money to be part of that newspaper business. That's something I see being quite exciting about the way Grab is thinking about the future. But to just add a little bit more context into our introduction of Grab, you know, Southeast Asia's leading super app. 10 years ago, they were only in one country, one city, being Singapore. Now, 10 years later, in 8 countries, 480 plus cities, 1 in 20 people in Southeast Asia either eat, ride, or pay with Grab every single month. So it is definitively, you know, the app of Southeast Asia.
Yeah, it's actually unbelievable. And it's worth calling out that they did actually start in Malaysia. I don't want to start like a bit of political tension here between Malaysia and Singapore. They did actually start in Malaysia, but they have moved their headquarters to Singapore. So they started in Malaysia as a different app called My Taxi, which is like very like a Malay way of calling it. That's T-E-K-S-I. And then as they kind of started to expand into other services, they then rebranded as Grab in 2014.
Yep. So, Albert, out of the three business segments, which is delivery, financial services, and mobility, which do you want to start looking at first?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's probably worth calling out is that they actually acquired Uber's mobility business, and maybe we can talk about mobility first in that and then talk about deliveries and financial services, because mobilities is really where this business all started. So their mobility business has about 71% market share, or around 71% is what people are estimating their market share to be. And they play in all kind of segments of mobility. So let me kind of just talk through the problem first, because that really illustrates how Grab has become kind of so prominent as a mobility player in the space. Like, there are obviously hundreds of millions of people in Southeast Asia and particular countries. You know, we've talked about how in Indonesia, there's 100 millions of people alone. Across Southeast Asia, there's, you know, close to a billion, more than a billion people. And so trying to get safe mobility with transparent pricing in these countries is incredibly hard. And then if you layer on these countries up, because they're so densely and heavily populated, it's really, really hard to get from A to B because of congestion. And also a lot of people can't afford cars. And so mobility itself isn't limited to just, you know, a four-wheel car, like a taxi, things like that. There's other forms of mobility. There's like tuk-tuks, which I'll call like three-wheel vehicles. There's bikes, mm-hmm. They're two-wheel vehicles, things like that. Grab offers mobility across all those different segments and helps people get from A to B. So they offer mobility across like bikes. Like, you can, you know, get onto a bike, you can rent a bike, you can be transported in a bike, you can get transported in a tuk-tuk, which is just like a small three-wheel motorized vehicle, driver at the front, you know, a little passenger seat at the back or at the side. It fits about 3 to 4 people, depending on, you know, how many people you want to squish in. Like, Dan, when you're in Indonesia, you go around in tuk-tuks?
Every now and again, yep.
Yeah, excellent. So you know what I'm talking about when you can kind of squeeze a bunch of people into a tuk-tuk. And then they obviously like also like taxis, rideshare, things like that. So they do mobility across all these different kind of vehicle segments, which means they help people get around really quickly at the kind of price tag they want. And this differs from some of their kind of Western counterparts like Uber and Lyft, who really only focus on like cars. Because when you're driving around in a car, you've got to pay for that Uber regardless of whether you're one person or four people, because you're paying to go A from B. With something like Grab, you can pay at different price points because you've got all these different people in Southeast Asia who have, you know, very differing, you know, wallet sizes, for lack of a better word, socioeconomic backgrounds, means that they can access these services at a much lower cost. And that's what's helped them become incredibly successful in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I might throw a couple other thoughts in there, particularly as to how Grab beat out Uber. I think the all-encompassing factor would be that idea of local knowledge. You know, as a Southeast Asia native company, they had sort of local knowledge of the local issues and how to solve those in a particular way, which Uber didn't. And there was two main issues that customers were facing that Uber, I think, really grappled with compared to Grab. First was, at the time, you know, 10 years ago, cash was absolutely king, and Uber was very much a paperless, cashless business. They didn't transition While it's funny, Grab at the time was very, very welcoming of cash, which encouraged lots of customers to use their services. And now they're sort of pivoting 10 years later towards a more cashless ecosystem. But that was one really big reason. And then the second really big reason, as you're touching on, Albert, was they weren't just focused on taxis or cars. They use Grab Bike as an initiative to have people on motorbikes, really single-person transport, which Uber wasn't getting into. And they use that to really take over market share and expand into Asia. What's interesting for me, Albert, is, you know, that was the problem that they were solving 10 years ago. And now, 10 years later, very, very different world. As I mentioned, you know, cash is starting to phase out and we are starting to have Grab's super app with its financial services wrapped in being a really key driver of customers and more transactions on their platform. So what do you see as being like, what's their challenge now that they're trying to solve, which is, I think, a bit different to what they were trying to solve 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, they've started it as a cash delivery business or a cash mobility business, like you said. But as you acquire more users, you get to understand all these different problems. And a key problem that a lot of their drivers had is that those drivers didn't have bank accounts. Yep. So they were making money through, you know, their mobility business. Like, they're getting paid cash. Grab quickly saw an opportunity here to start expanding into some of these other verticals like financial services. So we've got these drivers who are customers of ours. They're people who make a living through our business there. But with the living that they make, the cash, they actually can't do anything with it. They in terms of, you know, storing it safely, things like that. We've provided an avenue for people to get around safely. Now that we know that there's people who use our product, how do we get them to store the money that they've earned on our platform, acting as a driver, and store that safely? So that helped them drive a wedge into this market of bank accounts, and then from bank accounts moving into wealth management and then insurance, because that's obviously a big one for anyone driving a vehicle around full-time, is you want to insure your vehicle, your car, etc. And now they're also doing loans. They're moving into investing. Like, this business is like DoorDash, Uber, Square all rolled into one. And that's how they got into financial services. From like a challenge perspective, like, it is a completely different game, Dan, to build out a financial services product. But it's funny because, you know, all the key challenges that people talk about, Grab have just like smashed out of the park. So when it comes to like customer acquisition and education of a business or a geography that's effectively bankless, like, they haven't had to do much of that because their drivers are already using their app. They're already using the Grab platform. So it's easy to go find the right customer personas to onboard onto your platform. You've already won them over. From a regulatory standpoint, this is something that, you know, governments are trying to push for, is that they're trying to get increased visibility over customers and citizens. You're trying to get them to go from bankless to having bank accounts because you're trying to push a lot of people into the digital age, as, you know, Southeast Asia has its like digital renaissance that it follows, you know, China and other countries. And so the relationship from like a financial regulation standpoint is actually pretty good. Unlike a lot of fintechs who kind of skirt financial regulations because they're moving much faster than regulators can. So I think navigating the challenge, and they've done this incredibly well because it shows in how quickly people have adopted their product. It is difficult. Those two businesses, financial services and mobility, are incredibly difficult, but they've done it in the right way.
Yeah. The reason why I found Grab such a complex business to get my head around is because in some ways it has these business segments which are separate from each other. They could be businesses all amongst themselves, but the fact that they're all under one masthead has actually created a whole bunch of synergies and a whole bunch of potential avenues of revenue, which is what makes this the super app. And really the complexity is in how these things mesh together. So like an interesting takeaway from what you're just talking about there, Albert, is the drivers themselves are a source of business for Grab, and they are also a quasi-employee for Grab in delivering mobility services to particular customers as well. They've got, you know, I won't call them a workforce because that has legal implications, but, you know, they got 5 million drivers on their app. That is a significant, you know, segment of individuals that they're providing services to, like you're saying, Albert, loans, financial services, you know, and basically cashless banking with their app. All of these sort of services that delivering then create customer loyalty, driver loyalty, which keeps them on the app, keeps them in the ecosystem, which then drives benefits and efficiencies for the mobility service. So in some ways, all these different segments are separate, and then in other ways, they all link in with each other. And to me, that is the complexity and the genius of Grab.
And this really shows in how they're performing as a business. In 2018, only 12% of their monthly users were using multiple Grab services. And as of their like latest results, over 60% of monthly users are using their services or multiple services. So they've gone in a, you know, a short kind of 4-year time horizon from just over 1 in 10 users using, you know, multiple services to 1 in 2 users or more than 1 in 2 using multiple services, which is like incredible growth to push people through their like Grab ecosystem. I think as they've increased the volume at which they get users to use multiple apps or multiple services, they've also squeezed more cash out of those users. So they've gone from making about $350 GMV per monthly user to now making about $580, so close to $600. So they're almost or closest to doubling, also within that time frame, how much that user is spending on the platform. So you know how we always talk about the tension point between like growing revenue or growing costs, trying to optimize for two different levers in the business. They've done that. They've increased volume and they've also increased share of wallet.
So, but let's, and I know we're probably focusing on mobility and delivery a little bit at the moment, but let's stay here and talk about some of these levers of their cost structure, because this is where I was really struggling. One of the big criticisms we both had of Uber and some of the other ride and mobility services, platforms, is the amount in which they're pumping into marketing and the amount in which they're, you know, basically subsidizing rides by offering discounts, et cetera, to compete in what is a very, very competitive marketplace and very competitive area. When I was looking at Grab's sort of annual reports, you know, they're bringing down that incentives costs from about 13% to 11%, 10%. To me, it still seems like a really high number that on average, every ride Grab is subsidizing by about 10% in some form of subsidy, whether it be to the driver, whether it be to the customer. Can you help me make sense of this? Why is this actually a good thing being around that mark?
Yeah, so the way these marketplace businesses work, like mobility businesses, is that there's like the ride and that cost, you know, say $30 for like a better, maybe let's say $100 just to use round numbers. And so there's a take rate that Grab gets of that $100. And there's an incentive structure that they give their drivers, so like their payments. And then there's like discounts on top of that to incentivize riders to use their platform. So those are kind of the three big cost buckets, which is what they pay drivers, the discounts they take and they give to riders, and then the money they take. So that's like the three key levers for any mobility business that they need to pull upon in order to get to profitability. For Grab, they're taking, let me just bring up the numbers here. They're paying their drivers around 15% in terms of their incentives, and their commission rate's about 22%. And so that's already incredibly low. Then there's also like consumer incentives that's around like 20 to 25%. And so when they strip it all away, for every, this is just like the unit economics for Grab, for every $1 of fare, Grab makes about 12 cents. So for this $100 ride, Grab's making about $12 in like profit. That's like what they call gross margin or gross merchandise volume, adjusted EBITDA for anyone who's looking through their financial statements. Uber makes 6%, which is half that. So Grab is doing like twice the amount of like EBITDA than on a margin level than Uber is, because they're paying lower incentives both to drivers, they're paying lower excess incentives, so additional incentives, and they're paying lower consumer incentives.
And the importance of this sort of structure, payment structure, cost structure, is that it just scales. Because if you're making that kind of margin on every single ride, then the more rides you have, the more money you make. It's just really a money-making machine at that point, isn't it, Albert?
Yeah. So, I mean, the argument that a bear would put on is that, you know, at some point you're never going to hit long-term profitability because you're always going to be reducing your either share of the wallet by reducing, increasing prices to get to profitability, or you're going to keep giving out incentives to win drivers over. But Grab has consistently increased its kind of GMV profitability, going from, you know, 11 or going from like 7% in 2020. I don't know if whether that's a good indicator because that was COVID. But, you know, they're around 5 to 7%. And now they're at, you know, 12%. Even in 2021, they're at about 13%, 10%. So, you know, it comes and goes. But the fact that even long-term over like a four-year period, and I totally get because of COVID, it's also hard because this business only went public in 2021. So there's kind of limited data pre-2021 that we can really draw upon, is that this business has, you know, broken even on its mobility business. It is cash flow positive. And so that to me is a great signal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing that people would throw out, the, I guess, financial side of things for Grab, is they have been unprofitable overall as a business for the last 3 years, I think somewhere between $2 and $4 billion across each of those years. Albert, I think that's less concerning because they're investing back into the business, not just across mobility, but also into delivery, which is sort of an expanding vertical for them, and also financial services. I guess this is here where maybe we just talk a little bit on the delivery side of things. We've obviously talked of delivery businesses in the past with Coupang and others. To me, what makes this so much more attractive compared to an Uber or a like company is when you're in Asia, when you're in these huge mega cities, it does make a significant difference, population density. And when you're in Southeast Asia, hugely dense spaces, it just means you can get more value out of a single warehouse, out of particular drivers. They can visit more places in less time. To me, it's almost as simple as that, as to why I could be more attracted by a Grab in Southeast Asia than Uber, say, in America or Australia, trying to perform sort of deliveries.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like the density aspect to it, which really plays in Grab's favor. There's the market size because there's a lot more people. So you've got a lot more people in highly dense areas. But they also do like multiple forms of delivery. So not only do they do, you know, food, groceries, you know, small items and things like that, they also do parcels. So like they do peer-to-peer delivery. And if you look at this way, Dan, if you're a customer, you're really, your key lever is convenience. How convenient is it for me to go down to the supermarket to go buy a toothbrush versus buying it off Amazon versus getting on Grab? If you're Amazon and you're playing in the 24-hour delivery space, you are losing every time to a Grab who's playing in the 15 to 10-minute space. And we know without what the scale and infrastructure that Grab has built for itself with this like quasi-workforce or the people who use their platform, like a business like Amazon just can't compete because they don't have the infrastructure.
Oh, I love what you said there, Albert. The idea that Amazon's competing on 24-hour time frame and Grab and all these other delivery services are on like a 15-minute time zone. Can you go a little bit deeper on that? Do you think there's a point in which Amazon tries to compete, or is this one of those ones where it's a handoff last mile of delivery? Amazon is essentially contracting out to Grab, to Uber, whoever, to perform that last mile delivery.
Oh, this is a really, really good question. So I think these businesses, like delivery, mobility, et cetera, they're like what I bucket as high volume, low margin businesses. So they're things that you don't make a lot of money off. Grab's making 12 cents per dollar, not particularly high margin. And so they're not hugely attractive, but what they do is they let you win customers in like a customer love sense. But for Amazon, they've already won a lot of customers in key markets. They've obviously got a focus in the US. They're looking overseas as well. I don't think Amazon pushes into delivery in the same way as Grab has done to do it 15 minutes. I think they radically do it, you know, either using drones, they're using dark centers, they're doing what Milk Run has and has like localized distribution in order to get that 24-hour, 48-hour time frame down to 15 minutes. But to do that at scale across, say, Southeast Asia or any geography is going to take a lot of investment on behalf of Amazon. So to answer your question, like, I don't think Amazon can play in this space just because they're fundamentally not set up in the same way that Grab has been set up to do it in this way.
Let's maybe pivot, Albert, to look at the app. I mean, we've talked about it as a super app, so let's talk a little bit about the tech behind it, and we can perhaps fold in the discussion about the fintech as well. What I find really, really interesting about the app is the way that they're just starting to turn on, and I hinted at this at the start, this idea of advertising, because I can already think of two main advertisers that would be wanting to promote themselves through the super app. First is obviously food, restaurants, chains. You know, this is already a place where demand for someone who's hungry and is looking for food is getting aggregated. And so the idea that when they open up their Grab app, maybe to check their sort of their bank account, for lack of a better word, on the app, they might be checking some of their loans that they've got, doing whatever they want on the app, that now there's an advertisement, a banner which goes across saying McDonald's, blah, 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 blah. You know, you could be eating this tonight. That to me is really, really interesting. And then the second is obviously financial products, because again, Grab is providing insurance services, insurance through their apps. Well, why can't insurance businesses be advertising through the app for their particular services as well? So like, to me, those are the two types of advertisers, which is just a clear example of where they would go, where they would be willing to put some money to access Grab's millions and millions of customers.
For sure. I can't remember which investor said this a while ago, but someone had said in like early 2000, maybe early 2010, that like phones are going to become your remote control for the world. And then if they are the remote control for the world, then mobile advertising is like the biggest opportunity in the world, because everyone is, it's basically like a TV you can control. And Grab are doing this incredibly well. Like when you open the Grab app, it's a bit messy, and I've got a screenshot open here in front of me, but you know, you can see like delivery, food, hotels, like all the services that they offer. So there's like a lot of different prompts. But what that screams to me is like, as a consumer, you can open it and choose what service you want. It's basically become your default home screen through an app. And because of that, it lets them show those ads based on what people want. And a lot of people don't realize this about Grab, but it's like hyper-localized. So they do like incredible personalization to you based on what you're looking at. All the ads that you get are incredibly personalized based on your like Grab viewing and Grab history. So not only is like all their services hyper-localized, like the advertising is also hyper-localized.
Yeah, I mean, on their Investor Day presentation for 2022, they've got this nice graphic, a very, I think, stereotyped graphic where 23% conversion uplift because of personalization on the app. You've got a guy who's looking at electronics and gadgets on his app, and then you've got a woman looking at mother and baby on her app. Extreme stereotypes, but the idea is there that it's obviously personalization of the app. It's showing these people the particular things which they're sort of looking for on a sort of on a more basic level. Machine learning is processing their viewing habits, what else they're doing on their phone, and then providing them with a prompt based on those viewing habits.
Yeah, I think it's like when someone lives their entire life on your product and not just like mindlessly scrolling through Instagram, but like delivers all the, you know, orders all their food, books hotels, has all their money, bank accounts and things like that. You get all these different data points that actually lets you do the most incredible targeted advertising. Like if you know how much money someone has and then what they've been looking up and then what they've been buying and where they live, because you've got the mobility data, you know exactly what ad to target them with. And not many people have that data, but Grab does. And that's what makes their advertising platform like an unbelievable machine.
That's really interesting, Albert, because as you were saying that, you're right, because what do advertisers care about at the end of the day? It's that a customer is going to be able to spend money on their product. And so having an awareness of the financial capacity of consumers is fundamental, absolutely. And I was really interested looking through the materials. I didn't realize that they offered this, but it's something called sort of driver rider advance payments or loans, essentially. The idea being that, you know, if you're in between paychecks, and but you really need to take this ride to get home or get to the grocery store or whatever, essentially there's a very small micro loan taking place where Grab is covering the fee for that ride, and then you'll pay it back later once you have access to those funds. Really, really interesting, because if you've got someone like that, the obvious data point you're taking is, here's someone who doesn't necessarily have disposable income. They're literally between paycheck to paycheck. And then how significant is that for what kind of advertisers would want to be advertising to that person? It probably would be loan businesses, but probably would be less discretionary spend businesses, you know, consumer, retail, et cetera. So really interesting. Like, I think the conversation about how data is going to be used and what kind of data is available will become much more sophisticated. At the moment, it's sort of like, oh, all these apps aggregate our data without really thinking about how useful is that data? What is the most useful kind of data these advertisers are looking for? Financial data, I think, is the one.
Yeah, I think the other thing is the opposite end of that, which is like, this is how Grab is using that information. But what's key is that consumers trust Grab, like their customer base trust them. And because Grab's won the trust, it lets them do high margin things like advertising. It lets them do and offer other services like hotels, financial services. You know, they're talking about doing partnerships with telco businesses, you know, content businesses, things like that. So because Grab has this like innate trust with their customers, it lets them offer other services, even if they're like lower frequency, but much higher margin businesses, which means that they can continue to monetize each of these customers. And this is like why I love Grab and, you know, high growth business is just because the market size is huge, right? When your market is trying to target individuals and you're playing in by far one of the largest markets in the world with the Southeast Asia, and you're trying to take over each part or each vertical of these individual lives, starting with mobility, now food, groceries, now financial services. Like, there is an incredible amount of value that you can capture just by building trust, offering services and doing it well, and then rinse, repeat. It's amazing.
All right, Albert, as we start to finish up, what's one last thing you want to hit?
Look, I think the key thing here, I mean, Southeast Asia, I mean, you know this better than anyone else, it just moves so much faster than other places in the world. And speed and execution is a really big part of what it takes to win. We've seen Grab do this against Gojek, which is, you know, one of their biggest competitors, where Gojek took a very different kind of approach. Gojek really focused on Indonesia and winning that market. Like, it's obviously a very large market, and they've built a business, an incredible business in Indonesia, where Grab went and just quickly moved to multiple countries, Malaysia, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, Myanmar, Cambodia. Actually just having lunch with my parents, and I was asking them about Grab in the Philippines, and they're like, oh yeah, Grab's everywhere. Like, as soon as you step out, there's like Grab signs and you can't not see them. But there is always kind of a risk in Southeast Asia that someone is just going to outmaneuver you and is going to be more well capitalized, because that's what it is. That's what that region is. It's a very fast moving, incredibly fast moving region, faster than Silicon Valley. And if they can't continuously innovate at the same rate of speed, which gets harder to do as you get bigger, you play in multiple markets, like, the risk is that they're just going to get out executed, or worse is they're just going to sink a lot of money to compete.
Yeah, it's a good question, and this, or a good prompt rather. I think in this current environment, I don't see it as much of a problem. Like, if we think to 10 years ago, and this is where the Uber versus Grab case study is really illustrative, there was a lot of money in the marketplace. You know, people were willing to fund, you know, really, really expensive plays into foreign markets, really aggressive marketing campaigns, a lot of competition. That I just don't think is going to be the circumstances for the next 5 or so years. Like, I don't know which VC funds, et cetera, are going to be plowing money into a marketplace where Grab is the clear front runner. And that's why I think it's quite important for them to have stuck their stake in so many of these countries. Because I could definitely, if you ask me, Albert, or if you were to tell me that in 5 years, there's some Filipino local rideshare delivery fintech competitor that has come up and is challenging Grab, you're shaking your head, but I could say, yeah, I believe you. But I wouldn't believe that they've pushed out Grab completely. Like, at most, I could see it being a duopoly. And I think that's fine. A lot of these jurisdictions, marketplaces, they can handle having two really, really large players. And that's what's happening in Indonesia. You've got Gojek and you've got Grab. And I think that's probably the dynamic that's going to stay. It's like the vision of the future where Grab gets pushed out of the market completely. That I just don't see as being possible, because realistically then you need two players to come in and push them out and dominate them. And that just doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Grab have done this really well in that they've got kind of a internal like innovation business where they're trying really small things. So like Grab Wheels is a business that they're looking at that's focused on actually like trying to build out electric vehicles. You know, every mobility business thinks about EVs and how you're trying to autonomize. Grab Kitchen, which is like cloud kitchens. Grab Fresh, which is kind of very similar to Instacart, if anyone's familiar with Instacart. So Grab are trying to do what they can. You know, they've also launched a few businesses like a gold buying and selling business, like a logistics company, and a few more. So Grab are trying to innovate where they can because they know that there is a lot of people in Southeast Asia who can move incredibly quickly. So they need to do that as well.
Yeah. And I mean, they've understand this. They're hyper-local, as you say, Albert. This is one of those businesses where they're in the advantage. They're in the driver's seat, forgive the pun, because of all the data they have. So like as time goes on, the idea of the incumbent losing to a more nimble newcomer to me becomes less and less realistic, because that newcomer, like they just have to compete across the millions of data points that Grab is harvesting before they're even up to par competing with them. It just seems like a too high a hill to come over.
Yeah. I think as we wrap up, Dan, I think, you know, I just want to say that this to me is like such an incredible business. Like there's like a story about Grab where they were saying the founders, when they were trying to get drivers, like they realized that drivers don't have smartphones. So like they just went and bought a bunch of like cheap smartphones and like gave them to people who were interested in becoming, you know, Grab drivers. And that like solved the first problem of, you know, how you get people like drivers onto the platform to begin with. And then, you know, giving them bank accounts and all these other things. Like, and they, to me, just embody what it means to like hustle. And I love that in a founder. And so that's why I think this is an incredible business.
All right, Albert, I think that says it all, but do you want to do any last verdicts?
You know, it's, I wouldn't say it's like an A-plus home run business, but, you know, this business went public via SPAC last year. And so I'm glad it is public because it just gives people exposure to this business where it probably could have stayed private and probably would have stayed private for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I've become more keen on it as we've discussed it, Albert. Like I said, it's really, I think, complex business in that it's playing across a lot of different spaces, but you've really helped me, I guess, pull together some of those threads and understand what's driving it. There was a particular stat I think we looked up just before we started recording, Albert, about the amount of free cash flow they've got compared to their valuation, which to me, that kind of settled it as this is a business which is perhaps overlooked in the current marketplace.
Their current market cap is $10 billion, which, you know, is not particularly large for a business, especially Grab, because they went public at $40 billion via their SPAC. And they have about $5 billion, close to $6 billion in cash, and then, you know, close to $8 billion in cash and equivalents that they could liquidate pretty easily. This business is only being valued slightly higher, like 10 to 20% higher than the cash it has on hand. Can you imagine if someone came up to you and were like, we're going to disregard all the future earnings you're going to make. We're going to value you based on the cash you have right now. Like, that's crazy.
That is crazy. And that's the end of the pod, Albert. So I think that's a good place to finish up. Thank you for listening to the Fresh Capital Podcast, a podcast about companies and investing told in a refreshingly simple way. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week. See ya. Thank you for listening to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn how companies operate and how investing works. Just a reminder, all information contained in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, financial, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Fresh Capital are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any opinions expressed in the show are not recommendations or advice. Please consult a licensed financial professional before you jump in. As always, we look forward to seeing you next week. See ya!